morning.
Good morning.
Hello.
Everybody's
Hello.
early. Wow, you guys must be really excited.
We're chomping at the bit here.
Yeah, I
You
thought one of you would miss for sure because of the holiday
What
weekend.
holiday?
Well, you get Monday off, right?
Oh, that's right. Yes. Well, we got nothing going on this morning.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we're good to go.
Right on.
How are you guys doing?
I'm doing good.
Yeah, doing pretty
Yeah,
good.
I got a lot of rain and hail yesterday, and walking this morning was like fresh. It smelled fresh, and it was a good walk.
That's good.
Yeah.
I give you a lot of credit for getting out there and walking so early in the morning.
Yeah, well, I like walking.
Yeah.
It's very, I don't know, you can reflect on a lot of things.
That's true.
A lot of
Yeah.
things I think about on my walks are, how can I retire early? When, how many, how much longer do I have?
What comics are you still missing?
Yeah, I was, that's true. I was like, hey, I'm missing Crow number 3 and number 8. I need to find them.
Yeah. See?
Yeah.
Chris, I didn't see at the I'm putting my fingers in air quotes Comic-Con last Sunday.
Yeah, I was in my Huntress cosplay, so you probably didn't recognize me.
I did not recognize you. So it was in the Tops Plaza in one of the vacant storefronts.
Oh, that's an interesting approach.
It was packed to the gills. I'm glad that masks were required and that I'm fully vaccinated because you could practically see the COVID just in the air.
Co COVID haze.
Yeah, I mean, like, anyhow, it was absolutely, the amount of people in that little tiny space was ridiculous.
That's
I
because
was there
people
for
are
maybe a
hungry to
half an
get
hour.
out. That's why.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. Same thing when
But
I went to that place in California. It was like really full.
Mike, I panicked for other people when their masks came down, under their nose, how you see people. I'm like, "Oh my God, what are they doing? Get your mask up there. I don't
I'm
care if you're
not too panicky anymore because of all the science behind it that I'm reading. So it's like relaxing me. If you have your shot,
Yeah.
yes, you may get sick, but you're not gonna die. So
No, and I get that. I'm just
it's a little more I'm less panicky than I was when, especially when I got on a plane. Well, once you survive a plane, I think you can survive anything. If you can survive a three row by three row by three row plane trip, packed to the brim for 3 hours, then you could survive anything. So.
It's like you said, I think people were anxious to just get out and look around and stuff
Yeah.
because it was absolutely packed. But so the only thing that I picked up was I was missing all but two issues of the fourth volume of Captain America, and Guy had the full run just at cover price, so I picked up all the everything that I was missing.
Yeah,
I have
those
the
are good. Those are good deals because you go anywhere else and you're gonna pay that plus a little more plus shipping. So,
Exactly,
yeah, so
exactly.
it's
That's I
really
was
good.
thinking, I'm like, do I really want to get all it ran for like 32 issues, so basically like 30 ish. Do I really want to get 30 issues? Like all, I'm like, yeah, because if I don't, it's exactly what you said. Like, yeah, I could find it, but I find it
Yeah.
piecemeal here or there, and then I have to pay shipping and everything else. Even like my comic shop probably has it for $4 or $5 or $6 instead of, $3 each or $4 each.
Yeah.
So. But that was nice. Can I tell you guys a little story about the two of the comic shops that are in this neighborhood in this
Yes, I like
Western?
stories. I love
All right.
stories.
It's interesting. Now I'm going to give some background for you and for the listeners. Chris is just being, living in Western New York. He's familiar with the stores, if not, have visited them frequently. So there's Queen City Bookstore, comic book store. Been around since like 1969. The guy's dad, ran the shop, and then when he passed, the current owner named Emil, started running the shop. And it's what you would think of as a typical old school comic book store. Okay? It's got the smell, it's got the look, everything about it that you would think, okay, this is like the old time comic shop, right? For good and for bad. So like Stacy, she started reading comics. She's more comfortable than I think the average woman to go in there because she knows the owner by name and everything else now. But like, if you're a young woman, you probably wouldn't feel comfortable shopping in that store. Okay.
Why? Because it stinks, or because it's I don't know. Like,
It's
it's not
not.
like a. It's an older store with
It's an older store. It's more experienced clientele. They aren't necessarily overly.
friendly.
I don't know. I mean, Chris, you've been there before, right?
Yeah, but not in years. I mean, it's but I have gone there going back as long as like in the 80s.
Yeah.
It's real small. It's cramped. Like it's a small space to begin with, and then it's packed to the gills with comics, which is a good thing. But I don't
I mean,
think
if you're
it's I
looking
don't think
for
they're
back issue.
particularly like unwelcoming or anything like that. But
No,
it's like
I don't think so. I don't think they're unwelcoming, but
but it's the old school kind of like it's not by it's not by its nature, by its
welcoming to the new clientele.
yeah, it's
You have to
I
know
mean
what you're
they
doing.
aren't like outright they're not outright like I mean they're not
My kind of store, then.
nasty to people. It's
I
just that they,
like those
if
stores. I like the ones that I like the
I
ones
personally
that cater to the experience store,
Let me put it this way. If a younger person, young, you even like a female, if a younger female came in and started asking some questions, you could get the impression that whether he's trying to or not, it's kind of talking down to them.
Oh, I see. Yeah, I don't think they should ever do that. That's
Kind of like humoring, almost like
because
humoring.
they yeah, being like a sarcasm to it,
Yeah,
like
but not outright sarcasm.
not
But
outright sarcasm, but there's like snark in the
yeah,
reply.
maybe a little bit, maybe a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
So, but if you're going for back issues, if you're going for, I mean, they've got a bunch of dollar comics. They have wall comics. They've got drawers that have all sorts of old issues, and they have all the new stuff. So, I mean, this is a this is the bit like the probably the most well known of the comic stores. There's another place called Dave and Adams, which I'll just go into briefly. They're a very large store, but an ever shrinking comic book section. They mostly deal with sports stuff, like whether it's, I mean, they do a lot of cards, but I mean, their whole front end is just like clothing, like Bills, Sabres, all that like clothing. And so comics is a very small little section of their store. So unless you're going there to look through their 50 cent boxes, they have all the new releases, but they don't have a lot of other stuff. Okay. So that's one. But then the other main store that I want to tell you about is called Pulp 716. They're a very new store, probably last 5 years or so. They have two locations. They sell coffee, bubble tea, and like hot chocolates and stuff like that, as well as having a full service comics for all like new releases. And they do extremely well for those offbeat titles, like the ones that aren't DC and Marvel. They hype them up, they end up selling more copies than they sell of like Batman. Okay.
I like the idea of that, but as a store owner, it would stress me the hell out because when you mix drink and I don't know if people want to treat it like a Starbucks and take a comic book over to the table and read it, you know? I
Well,
don't
it's
want them to
interesting.
do that. I want them to buy it and then read it.
Now, from what I understand, they've gotten a lot of new customers because they might be coming in for bubble tea and they see all these comics and trades lying, all out all over the
True,
place.
because bubble teas, I it's a like a niche thing that once you start doing, like
Stacy's obsessed
it
with it.
becomes addictive. Like it, at least in my opinion, like if I could have like that honeydew bubble tea every week, I would love it.
Stacy does anytime she goes there, and now so she has a small pull list. We share a pull list there. I
Those
started because they were hyping old, like they were hyping certain comics so much that I felt guilty if I would just place the order on DCBS, because the only reason I'm even buying it is because they keep promoting it. So I opened a small pull list at Pulp 716, and Stacy joined me, and she gets maybe five, six titles a month.
She's really getting into this. Do you feel
Yeah.
like it's do you feel like it's like you forcing or it's like she her
Oh,
wanting? Is she
I
becoming
am
part
not.
of it? Okay,
Yes, I am
because
not.
I with Barb it seemed like it was a little forced. Except with ex there's some exceptions with like Fables and Jack of Fables and you know if Lila Sturgis was writing something or but it seemed like. Hey, read this. And it's like, okay, I'll read it. Oh, it was good. But it felt more like, you know, she didn't want to go do it.
I agree with, like, even some of the older stuff that I've had her read, whether it was Sandman, Fables,
Yeah.
Why the Last Man, she might have ended up, and she does, like some of the stuff, like Sandman and Fables, she absolutely loved, but it was still me forcing her to get started on it.
Yeah.
Know what I mean? But now, like, she just looks through to see. First, she was looking at the preview magazine. It's a little bit too overwhelming for her. Pulp 716 does a final order cutoff
Yeah.
every week. So she
I
shows
like
them.
stores.
That's what she does.
I love stores that do that FOC thing.
Yeah.
Like
So that's how
because
she picks what she wants.
yeah, it's there's a lot of FOC exclusives that you would just not know about. Like
Oh, absolutely. And in second prints and stuff like that.
yeah.
So these are the, like, three different shops in the area. So Pulp 716, again, they're great if you're looking for new comics, if especially
Enthusiasm too,
some
probably.
the
Yeah.
different ones, like what was the darkness one? You some promised me darkness something.
Yeah, you promised me darkness. Yeah,
Yeah.
be
So I mean,
Behemoth.
so they were hyping that up. They probably sold more copies of that than half of their DC and Marvels, and Queen City didn't even order any. You know what I mean? They're different types of stores.
True, but you also have different mentalities, and some of the other guys that have been around a long, they've been beat down, and they like they. Well, I'm being the honest. They have seen the highs and lows of the industry, where the newer person hasn't been burned yet,
That's
so
true. And
they're a little more open. But give 20 years, and if they make it that long, then they'll have seen some things that make them a little bit
Well,
cautious or bitter.
and here's the other thing that well, one other thing I want to mention, and the other thing that makes them very different. They don't have like a back issue stock. They have a couple short boxes of back issues, but I'm talking like within from like New 52 and more recent. That's basically, that's like maybe 8 years of comic books. They don't have,
Just what
it's not their,
they've
right?
accumulated while they've been open,
Exactly. Exactly, Chris. But the biggest separation is, and the reason why I think that they're catering for a different to a different type of clientele, is that it's owned by a woman, and 90% of their staff are young women. Okay?
Yeah.
716. Like, pretty much, it's really this woman and her husband that co-own. She runs one location, he runs the other location, but all of the managers are all young women,
And this is
and
a
almost
bubble tea
every
thing?
staff,
Or,
huh?
okay. That's the
You say
bubble tea?
the bubble tea, yeah.
Okay.
So here's my story. So 2
So
weeks
you
ago,
set it all up. You gave us a
this is
flavor, and this is
yeah.
going to turn into comic book rivals, like the movie, The Villains,
This is
comic book
exactly what it
villains.
is. This is exactly what it is.
Have you
Like,
seen that movie though? Comic book villains?
I don't think so. I no.
Rob, you need to watch this,
What is it
man.
called? I'm writing it down. What
It,
is it called?
it's comic book villains. It's about two shop owners that hear about a collection, like a guy dies, right? And they hear about the super collection, and that turns them into guys that they're almost to kill each other over this collection.
Okay,
So,
I wrote it
yeah.
down. I will check it out. Okay, so on Facebook, Queen City on Sundays puts up a picture with that they've generated that shows all the comic books coming out that Wednesday. So if there's anything that you want, you can just reply to
Wait,
the comment.
that's the older store,
The
right?
old store,
Yeah.
the old Queen City. So he puts that Emil. He's in his early 60s. His son works there part time as well. He's
Yeah.
like 10 years younger than me. So Emil puts that up, says, "Okay, this is what's coming out. These are all the comics coming out," and people start replying back to whatever they want. Okay, so down in the corner, in the left corner, there was a little message that said, "No gaming, no bubble tea, just comics. Trust the leader." Okay. So the owner of Pulp 716, the bubble tea place, put maybe on Twitter, maybe on Facebook, just like kind of like copied that and said, "Well, I'm not. I guess it's flattering that we're in his head or we're in other people's heads, but I'm not sure what's the cause for this when people come in and we don't have something in stock because again they don't carry old issues. It's like we refer them all over the place, including Queen City. But whatever. I guess we're doing something right, right?"
Yeah.
So people picked up on that. I think if she didn't do that, we wouldn't have seen anything else. But people picked up on that tweet and barraged the Queen City Facebook post with nasty messages about, like, just why are you attacking another
Well,
store and so forth.
that's probably her clientele. Like,
Yes. Oh, yeah.
that's the defense mechanism, and that's your first response. In other words, you're making fun of my store? Well, what are
Right.
you doing? I love these people. I'm going to go defend them.
And that's exactly what it was.
Yeah.
So, Emil just wrote back, like, "We said we just posted a phrase, nothing more. We just posted a phrase, nothing more."
Yeah.
Every response. In the meantime, that same day, every Monday, Pulp 716 does a promotion, which is called "That's Not My Name," and they list, I don't know, I'm just going to make up a number. Let's say 8 different names. And if it's your name that they list, you can go in and get either a free comic book or a free bubble tea on that Monday. Okay?
That's cool.
One of the names was Emil.
Oh.
She put Emil's name in case she's like, I don't understand the hatred for the bubble tea. Maybe once he tastes one and sees how delicious it is, he'll love it." Right?
Yeah.
So anyhow, I thought that was pretty amusing. But he got a lot of negative feedback. And like you said, to your point, you know it's from her clientele that kind of like going on the offensive, right?
Well, it happens on Twitter all the time.
Yeah.
Like somebody makes fun of a creator 'cause he does something and then his whole clientele go defend him. It's
Exactly.
happened it's happened in the podcasting community before.
I
Like
mean,
when I
that's
got it when I got into
your
that
staff
contra when I
taking
got into
sides,
that
right?
controversy with that ridiculous Boston store owner, he got attacked
Oh,
by a bunch of people. He
yeah.
doesn't own a store anymore, by the way, 'cause he's a jackass. He's one of those jackass owners that tells you, "Oh, why are you buying this? Like, what? Who are you to tell me why I'm buying something, you prick?" You know, like I, yeah, that's a natural response. And
Yeah.
at
But
first, Twitter used to do that to me. Like,
oh, you want to like react?
I would want to react instantaneously, But now I just digest it, and I after a while I just like, who gives a fuck, you know? Like,
Exactly.
it's not worth my time to go do that. Like
No, it's not.
like I
And what do
spelled
you and what are
Raphael
you going to
Grandpa's
prove?
name wrong. I spelled it like Grandpa instead of Grandpa.
And I didn't even notice that when I replied to you. I was just trying to
I
joke
just
around, and
let
then
it
I saw
go, and I was
somebody
like,
else.
that's pretty funny, 'cause the auto fill-in put grandpa to fix it, and I just left it. Like, I was like,
It's fine.
I don't care. That cover is gorgeous, by the way. I was like, oh, whatever.
Okay, so now net last week, so that was 2 weeks ago. So last week we said, okay, I guess that's the end of that. Now, just a bit more background. One of the employees at Pulp 716 absolutely adores Something Is Killing the Children.
Yeah.
And they promoted it when it first came out, they promoted it so much that James Tynan reached out to Pulp 716 and
Yeah.
asked if he could come there. So that he came there. It was just before he
Yeah,
was going to start back on.
he's done that in other states and
Yeah,
places
really
too.
cool, right?
Yeah.
And so like anytime they post something with like, oh, anyhow, so this one particular young woman, she loves it. She cosplays as that main character with the bandana, you know, okay. So she does these cosplays that are so like spot on incredible. She's now been on two comic book variant comic book covers of Something Is Killing the Children. Okay.
Oh yeah, is she the cosplayer or what? Okay. I've seen her pictures. Yeah.
Yeah, so I have one of them now. A new one just came out where she's like holding this axe,
Yeah.
staring like straight on. So last week's Queen City Facebook post of what's coming that week said in the corner, no hockey cards, no hatchets, just comics, trust the leader, right? So at first I thought he meant like, you know, do you have axe throwing places in your area? That's like a seems to be a new
We
thing here.
used to, but it died because of the COVID.
COVID?
We had
Yeah.
the hatch throw a hatchet. It's
So
right it's
yeah,
right next
that's
to
it.
it's right next to like a destroy a car, like a
Yeah,
place
we don't have that to
where
my
it's like
knowledge.
they put a like a rundown car in the, I guess, in the store, and then they give you like bats and stuff to destroy it, so
That's
you can
new one
let
to
your
me.
frustration release your frustration and destroy something.
I guess so.
Yeah, and then
So
they
I
have
thought that's what
the
the cat, what, you know, that's what it referred to. But no, it was talking about the fact that this woman is, you know, on covers with a hatchet. So now it's getting a little bit where, okay, it's like a rivalry between stores, but now you're kind of like, I don't know, egging on just an individual person who works at the store. She's not even like the owner or anything. She's just an employee. And honestly, this is just me and going back and forth with it and seeing it in real time.
Yeah.
I just feel like it's a bad look that
Well, it's
you
probably
got a
deeper. It's
62-year-old man like kind of putting down a woman who's probably in her mid-20s. It
yeah.
just doesn't look good. And he's the owner of a store too. She's just private person, like, you know, a private individual. Not, she's not the owner or anything like that. She's not looking good. And I mean, if you would have
Well,
seen
one
the
store feels threatened, the other doesn't, I don't think.
No, absolutely. That's
So
100%.
the Queen City feels threatened, so that's why they have to make pop remarks. Like,
I just, at this point, I don't understand what he thinks he's gaining by doing this because it, obviously he's getting a lot of. I mean, yeah, it might be their own customers, you know, saying this
No,
against them,
you're
but
but by making quips like that, he's not gonna appeal to anybody except for angry comic fans, I think. Like
well,
he
I'll be honest, I
people that
think
are
that
already shopping there, you know, like
yeah.
it's just like speaking to the echo chamber.
But
Or
you know,
people
like
that
it's
hate that shit. I mean, it could be like your older clientele that just that's
it
stupid
really is
stuff.
ridiculous. I've
Yeah.
been going there since I was probably 12. I'm really like, if I want to get stuff, I may just start adding things to pull lists and pulp and not doing it for Queen City anymore. I'm like, it's just It was kind of the way that he did it. It's kind of gross. I don't think that it's appropriate at all. I don't know what you gain by doing something like that.
It sounds
I
exactly.
really don't like it.
It sounds exactly like comic book villains because the Daniel Lange actor, he plays the guy from Queen City, and the other one is like an up and coming one, played by like I think it's Michael Rapaport. I'm not sure which one, but he plays the other store owner with his wife. And with the bubble tea place, like the more clean slate. And the other thing is, it's written by James Robinson. So if you're a
Oh,
fan of
really?
James Robinson, you need
Oh, that's
to
cool.
yeah.
Yeah, so anyhow, that's the story. The only other thing that I'll mention is that I was looking for it to see if I could read it off, but I can't find it. Pulp 716 did post something towards the beginning or middle of last week and basically said, like here in Western New York, we have a ton of amazing comic shops. You should, be sure that you've gone around and checked them out, and lists maybe like eight different shops, Queen City being the second one that they list. So
Yeah.
they're not.
Yeah.
Here it is. I found it. I found it. Not. It says it's New Comic Book Day every Wednesday. Check. Click here to see this week's releases. Not sure where to get comics. Here's a list of shops located in Western New York. Haley's Comics and Games, Queen City Bookstore, 1811 Comics, Gutterbop Comics, Collectors Inn, The Cars Store, David Adams, Empire Comics, 3D Comics, Pulp 716, Lockport, and North Tonawanda. And then it says, and for coffee and games, check out Iron Buffalo. We just love comics, okay? And so they're not taking this, like, they're not taking the bait. They're not fighting back. They're not escalating, I should say.
No,
You know what I
they're
mean?
acting like adults.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's the other thing that impresses me is that they're like, we're not doing this.
Yeah.
There's no reason for it. They seriously have. Like, Stacy's been in the store and, like, people have asked about certain issues. Like, no, we don't, but Queen City might. Like, I'm talking months ago, It's like, it just seems very petty and it kind of aggravates me. So I just wanted to share it with you guys. And Chris, you have a little bit, context because you kind of know where these places are, even if you haven't visited often. But yeah, it kind of feels like a Goliath beating up on David, honestly.
Yeah, but there's once
Maybe,
they're
but
taking the high road, so
yeah.
that's the way I would do. People like that, you beat them down by kindness. That's what I try to do. Like, just try to be professional. Like,
Yeah, because they don't know how to react to that.
I do that. I run into clashes all the time on my Dynamite Entertainment, 'cause there's these guys that just hate things. Like, they'll hate those, if they do something with Red Sonja and superpowers, like they're just like hardcore, fans of the Golden Age material, and they just so I just attack them with professionalism. I think about what to say, and it's like before I would have just kicked them off.
Yeah.
I would have just booted them. Say, I control this page. I don't need your shit. And then now I just and then they go away on their own.
Well, because they're yelling and
They just
complaining.
get so angry
It,
for
they want, well,
nothing.
they, and they want reactions to that too,
But they
right?
have no common sense, because if you're a company, you're gonna make what sells. You're not gonna make what doesn't sell. Like,
No, and there's nothing wrong
Red
with
Sonja sells,
different.
man. Project Superpowers does not. So you mix them together and you can get another property out there and do something with it.
Well, and maybe an interesting story
Yeah.
that, isn't a typical story. You've
Yeah.
thrown something else in there that makes it a little bit more
But some people just
unusual.
hate change. Like,
Yeah.
Well, some people are so like in they're so stuck in their fandom that they can't see anything from the outside. Like they can't see things from a business perspective. They just, they can only see things from their own tastes.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely.
You need to
Yeah, but
watch
that's
this
that.
movie, though. You're gonna love it.
Comic book villains, huh?
Yeah.
Okay.
I loved it so much, I bought the DVD. It
I think
is
I've seen
so
that.
good. Yeah.
I only sort of remember it though.
There it is. I see it. Jerry Elways?
Yeah.
All right, this is cool. Wow, it's got a lot of people on there.
It does. A lot of familiar actors, anyway.
All
That's
right,
funny.
cool.
That was all news to me, Rob.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm sh well, first of all, are you're not on Facebook at all, right?
Right.
Chris? Yeah. I mean, the Queen City side is 100% on Facebook. And just the, I mean, oh my God, the replies, especially to the second one, once he started, once he brought in just one particular person into it, were brutal. They were brutal. But kind of appropriately so. It's like, I don't know. People are like, why are you highlighting the services you don't offer? Like, is there anywhere I can go and get comic books and bubble tea? So, anyhow, it was just.
Do you get a bubble tea when you're there?
I don't like the thing, the
The
squishy thing.
tapioca balls, you don't like them?
So I'll just get plain up. Like I'll get an iced tea. It might be a flavored iced tea, like blueberry or ginger or something, but I won't have any stuff in it.
Oh man, have you tried the stuff though? And have you at least tried it once?
Stacy's always gets it, so I've had some of it.
Oh, so
It's just not
yeah,
my
you
thing.
really. I just wanted to make sure you really don't like it,
Yeah.
but yeah, you don't like it
Not really, no.
because it's something I'm a texture guy. Like, so it's weird to have like a smoothie with these little balls in the bottom, but
Yeah.
I don't know. It once I had it, it was like, wow, these are great.
That was right up your alley.
Yeah, it's right up my alley.
But
Now we're
anyway.
making our own flavored teas. Like we're buying our Barb bought like from a tea place in New Mexico, and now we're buying all these teas.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we're making our own. She's making. I say we're. Like I contribute at all except to give a critique on which ones I like and which ones I don't.
So you mean
I haven't drank
you're
one
doing the
that I.
taste test?
Yeah, I haven't drank one that I didn't like. I have ones that I. And she always does like a 50-50, so she'll like put like the bee pollen with creamsicle tea and like blueberry and mix them together.
Interesting.
Yeah.
You guys are getting very fancy with your teas.
I like my tea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The only I just want to mention too, Pulp 716 last year was one of the nominees for
New
what
stores,
the hell?
Eisner.
A shop of the year.
Yeah, the
One
Eisner
of the
Award.
like the four or whatever finalists for
Yeah.
shop of the year. It didn't win. Some store out in Europe won, but I mean that's
To be
around the world
nominated
for
is
national.
pretty high
Well,
anyway,
yeah,
yeah.
and they made it to the finalists where it was like the last four or five shops, whatever it is. That was pretty impressive. So yeah, they're very good. I can't recommend them highly enough.
That's why I'm not so sure it's even a case of Goliath and David. I mean, maybe in terms of longevity, but as far as success, I think maybe Goliath is realizing they're not so tall and not and feeling a little uncomfortable with that. I
I
mean,
think
admittedly though, they are past time recipient of the Retailer of Western New York Award though, so maybe they're just fine.
I maybe, but I mean, obviously they're seeing something that they're uncomfortable about. I mean, the fact that Pulp 716 has two locations doing very well, though Tonawanda location, they actually had a store next to theirs that went out of business, and they took over that entire space and knocked down the wall. So this is during COVID. So it's like they must be doing something right.
Well, they had the COVID, hey, we serve coffee
Ooh,
and
yeah, they were
teas.
able to get, they're
Yeah,
the
so
only comic
they're
shop
able
close to New
to
York
get
that got free
away.
toilet.
They're
They
able
opened.
to get away with that.
Yep. Yes, they were open there the entire time when everything else was shut down.
Rob, you didn't catch my sarcasm, so you might have forgotten where the source of that award I was mentioning.
Get it now. What was is that what is that what he won at the Comic-Con?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean that was impressive. He was
Comic-Con that they put
actually
on.
the first winner of that award too, you know.
Yeah, inaugural.
One other person did win that award after him, and then I haven't heard nothing about it since. So you should share with Mike what you're talking about.
He has
Well,
his
just
own
that.
Comic Con and he nominated himself for a win.
Oh, Mike! It's almost
That's what it
like you
sounds like.
live
I get the gist of it.
here.
Yeah, that's exactly
They had awards at the Comic Con and essentially awarded themselves retailer of the area. That was pretty amazing.
I remember that because that's the one of the that was their first convention center one. And that's we went we met each other up there, right? And we were walking around, and it's like, like, wait a minute, but he's creating this. Like, yeah.
I mean, I guess if we're going to try to give him benefit of the doubt, like maybe it was other people that voted on it, but it didn't really seem that way.
Don't believe that that's the case, but I
Yeah.
could be wrong.
Yeah. I just want to, leave whatever room for doubt I can there.
Exactly. You
Just to
never
be
know.
fair. You never know.
So anyhow, that's my story. I just needed to I just needed to share that.
Yeah, that's. Was not aware of all that.
We'll see what's in the corner of their thing today when they post it.
Yeah, hopefully they really need to stop, but
Oh. It's a double down.
like I said, it's just I think it's speaking to the preaching to the converted, so to speak. People that are going to be amused by that are already shopping there. And anybody
Exactly.
that's not amused by it, like yourself, are going to be pushed away. So it's not really doing you much good there.
No, I don't think it's doing them any favors at all.
But I don't know, maybe you get to a certain point, you don't care.
Maybe. I Certainly seems that way.
Yeah, I don't. I would go to one place for back issues if I needed to look for them, and the other place for current issues.
Yeah.
Because when it comes down to it, I'm a selfish bastard. It's like, what do I need, and who's serving me what I need?
Well, see, it does make it. I have to say, I'm conflicted because I don't approve of any of this. I think it's outright wrong in
I agree
something.
with you, but there's part of me that just doesn't care, like, because I don't want to get involved in that as a
Yeah,
consumer.
no,
Like,
and I
for
understand that.
example, like I've read the newsletters for the guy in Texas in my comic shop, and if I took those to heart, I would stop buying comics from my comic shop because he just swings in the other direction. And I'm not going to do that because he provides good quality service at a good price. And what do I need? I need to consume a quality product.
Well,
It's
and see,
like I.
and Mike, I know what you're saying because even though I do not like this at all, I've been going there for almost 40 years. They are very good to me. They're very friendly to Stacy and the kids. They are, do you know what I mean? I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've been there where I've brought one kid or the other, and they kind of look behind them on their shelves, find a little, like, little tiny toy or whatever that they might have been selling for $2 or $3, and they just hand it to Zach or Allie.
Yeah, see, I would
It's
be
not.
I would be conflicted.
I'm very much.
I mean, I don't know. It depends on the friendship you have. Like, I would never leave Ed's because I don't know. It's like this loyalty or bond. Like, he does things for me, I'll do things for him. Sometimes I'll take a cheeseburger by and say, "Here's your lunch," and he's like, "Oh, okay, cool." But I don't know. Like, I know what makes me happy, and I'm tired of everything being this or that. In other words,
Yeah.
choose a side, you know? And it's gotten that way in family life too, you know? Like, we don't talk to my aunt anymore, and it's like, what, you know, how much is too much? I'm seeing a coworker that moved out of his house
Is this
because
all politics or other or some other
his
thing?
wife is like QAnon or whatever you want to call it, QAnon, and is yells at the kids because they got their shots and stuff, and now she's the only one living in the house, and it's destroyed their marriage. So, like, I don't know. I don't. I, who am I to? I don't. I don't. I'd rather just. How I, in my eyes, Donald Trump created this. He made things go crazy, and I hope we get back to some normalcy, 'cause you know people have their beliefs, and sometimes it's better just not to know what they believe, because it could destroy a friendship that you've always cherished because you've never talked about that or you've never known that kind of stuff, you know?
Honestly, I don't think it's ever been, for whatever reason. Well, I could tell you what I think the reasons are, but again, that's me by being biased towards my side. But I don't think it's ever been that important before. I don't think that it was that big of a deal that you were a George Bush supporter.
Right. Well, George Bush doesn't even like Trump, so I mean, that just goes to show there's.
That's what I'm saying, is that there's a difference in policy.
Yeah.
Can disagree on policies.
Yeah, I just yeah, it's a tough subject.
It really is.
I have coworkers that I just don't want to be in the room when they're talking because I like these guys are good workers. I love the way I love working with them. I love to bounce ideas off of them, but if they're talking politics, I just rather not. I just choose to ignore and pretend I didn't hear it because I don't want to destroy what collaboration that I
I
already
mean,
have, you know?
exactly. Yeah, you got, I mean, you have a working relationship there. You don't want to destroy that. You can't.
Yeah, well, I think there's like different situations. Like work is one thing where you know, if you're not the person hiring and you're not in charge, like you know, choose who you work with. So it makes sense to just, not engage and for the sake of, continuing to have a working relationship because you don't really have a choice there, but like there's extremes, it's there's not one solution to all scenarios, because you have a situation where you have someone that's happens to be a Republican, but there's somebody you can talk to and have a you can agree to disagree and you can have a civil conversation with them. That's one thing, and I think it can be a mistake to, if you're going to make it all or nothing and shut everybody out that doesn't agree with you, I think is a bad approach to take. But
Very
then to
bad
just,
approach because you might see something that you never saw before.
right.
So
But then on the
if
other
you can
hand,
have that civil conversation where you could bounce ideas and you're like, "Well, I didn't know that," and then you can go check in on it and say, and then serve your own opinion, you know, based on fact. But it's
right.
good to know. I think it's good to know both sides of the puzzle. Like I.
Right. But on the other hand, it's also, I think, bad to take it to the other extreme where you don't make you don't have any principles, you don't take a stand on anything, and you don't, there isn't a point, you don't have a line where you don't
Right,
cross,
right.
where it's like you give the example of a marriage where maybe you've made those efforts, maybe you've tried to save the marriage, maybe you've tried to come to a common ground, but your spouse is gotten so deep into conspiracy theory and
Yeah, there's nothing
it's
saving this. This
damaging to
is
your
the
children, then there's a point
exactly,
at which you need
exactly.
to move on. So it's like everybody has to make that choice, like where is the line for you,
In
and
this choice,
so
I've told my friend, hey, this has gone on for more than a couple years and you're miserable. And it's going to affect his retirement. Like, he was going to retire in August. Like, and now he's like, I'm going to have to work another 5 years because of this bullshit. And yeah, it's nuts. And like, he was seeking counseling and scheduling things, and then she doesn't go. So it's like, what can you do to try to repair something that almost can't be repaired anymore? You just try to sever it and then eat it.
Well, yeah, you can't be the one, the only one doing all the work towards this. It needs to be on both sides that both want this to work. But I mean, it doesn't sound like that's what's happening in his case. It is, Chris. I like the way you said everything that you just said. I mean, that's exactly it. It's like, you do have to have a line at some point. And I think that that's what caused a lot of the chaos over the past 4 years, is that for those people who didn't buy into Trump or didn't like him, it felt, and I'm speaking personally, it felt like it was much more than, oh, I just don't care for his policies. I feel like he personally is not a good person. And I would not want to be seen supporting somebody who behaves in the manner that he behaves. It's so much more than what he's doing as an official. It's how he conducts himself.
Like
It's
Lex
very tough.
Luthor.
Yeah, like I'm like there are, I mean, it seems like there's like I can have respect for the way that politician on the of that I disagree with conducts themselves. There are still examples of those who have held on to their principles, and I might disagree with their policies, but I can have respect for them as a person for having principles and sticking to them,
I'll give you
and
an example from the recent past. Is John McCain, I thought, was an amazing human being. I didn't necessarily care for a lot of things that he might have stood for policy-wise, but there was no doubt that he loved the United States of America, and he was doing everything that he thought was best for it.
Yeah. And you can see what type of person Trump is, that that's the sort of person he has no problem belittling their sacrifices. But anyway, getting pretty heavy here.
Yeah.
Thanks for joining us on American Politics.
I can make it retro though. We watched all the President's Men last night.
Did you?
Have
I've
you
never seen it
guys?
before, but I've always wanted to.
Yeah, same here. We finally ended up watching it, and that's about the Washington Post reporters that investigated Nixon, that broke the news on Nixon. So
Ah.
How was it? Excellent.
was good. Yeah, it was good. Definitely, like, it's interesting. It's been a while since I watched an older movie, and just the pacing is different, so much different. Really, 70s films
Yeah.
compared to nowadays, it's just so much more patient with like the cuts, you know, and the scene cuts and things like that.
That's because back then you could build a story. Now it's like you have to have instant gratification. Because of technology, they have to speed things up.
Yeah, it's fun seeing all the old technology too. You know, I like watching movies where they don't have cell phones or they were using a copy, like a 70s copy machine at one point. It was like that looked like such a beast of technology. This massive thing, but you know, like there was one scene where Robert Redford is like making up a couple phone calls, and I was just thinking about the fact that they actually showed him dialing each number, you know, on a rotary phone, you know. And yeah. I was just thinking that nowadays there would have been like four or five cuts in this one scene, and it would have, you know, well, he wouldn't have had to dial the phone in the first place, but, you know, it wouldn't have, you know, shown him and putting like the buttons on his phone or whatever like that, you know, it wouldn't have taken that. It would have been like, boom to this call, and then boom to this call, and boom to this call, you know.
Exactly.
But anyway, yeah, it was cool. It was interesting. It was a good movie, but just to go back to another, which is just interesting, like Bob Woodward, one of the guy that Robert Redford plays, to think about his career, you know, this is where he sort of made his career. To think about his career, you know, he recently wrote two books about Trump, you know, and to think about to have broken his career on reporting on Nixon and then lived to see Trump's presidency and write a couple books on that. Like he wrote Fear and another one after that. So just interesting to think about his career.
Very interesting. Yeah, that's a good point.
You watched an intelligent movie and I watched Shark Night and Piranha 3D. So
you'd be surprised at how similar those are.
Yeah, we could probably relate.
I always wanted to watch All the President's Men, and I've never seen Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, and that's another one I really want to see.
I've never seen either of those movies. Those are the movies you have to drag me to, but I enjoy. In other words, forcing me to watch it, and then I'm like, wow, this is really good. Like, yeah, I really like it, but it's like getting the motivation to do it for me personally is hard. I need somebody to push me. Like,
why do you think that is?
It has to be Barb to say, hey, let's watch this, because I think it's because I'd rather watch Piranha 3D. Like I don't know. But then when I remember stuff, I'll remember more from the other movie because it's got more to think about. Like,
yeah.
But maybe I don't want to think. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. Interesting.
We went to our first movie theater, and it was pretty good.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. We saw The Quiet Place 2.
Did you have to have your mask on while you're not eating, or there's no more?
No, they've – as of yesterday, they changed their mask policy here where you could – if you have a shot, you don't have to wear a mask. But they have another sign is we're not going to audit who has a shot and who lies about it.
Everyone's going to tell you the truth, Mike.
We suggest you wear a mask according to the CDC, but that's on you. So
yeah,
we played the game where we wore masks during almost 90% of the movie, and then the other 10%, we were eating popcorn and drink, so.
Yeah.
So that's the kind of game that we played.
Well, you know what? Good for you. I'm glad that you got out there. You saw it. I'm very much looking forward to seeing that movie. I probably won't just because it's not Stacy's thing. In the past, I would just go by myself, but I think I'll just hold off and wait for a movie that we both want to see to actually go to the theater.
Yeah.
So I'll probably just wait for it to come out on BOD.
And they have like they still have like a COVID seating thing. Like there was like three seats to the right of me, and like it's still like you don't have anybody next to you.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't. It's a good way to ease into, I think.
Three seats to the right of me. Two steps to the right. Here I am. Stuck in the middle with Barb.
That's awesome.
That was pretty good.
Mike, did you know that a ton of that movie was filmed right here?
Oh, no, I didn't.
Yeah, in Western New York. Yep.
Right at Rob's house.
No, I didn't mean here in my house.
It was good to shoot there because it was very quiet at Rob's house. Hmm? It was a very good, quiet cool. place.
There's a bridge. Isn't there a bridge scene or something? You see a bridge.
The bridge scene is from the first one, and they redo a bridge scene here too.
Okay, yeah, the one that they redo, it's the Grand Island Bridge, which is right near me.
An older bridge, I take it.
Well, you know, they painted it.
Yeah. No, but it's not a big bridge, right? I mean,
no. Mm-mm.
It's one you can walk across.
Pretty short.
Yeah, it's pretty short.
There's Grand Island is, you know, an island, obviously.
Grand.
So it has the thruway. The thruway runs across it, so it has a bridge on either side. If you're going across it on the thruway, you got to go. I have driven across it thousands of times.
Thousands and thousands, yes, sir.
I'm just looking to see.
What is across it?
Across it.
Okay, because you made it one word. Across it.
The southbound bridge was completed in 1935.
Yeah, I think you'll like it, Rob, because it builds on the first one. It's got like the high tense moments. It introduces the world that the first one didn't.
Yeah.
It kind of shows day one, so
that's awesome.
Yeah, it was good, and I can't believe how many, like, even watching the previews, it was like, wow, they got a lot of horror movies coming out. Because usually you go see a movie, if it's a romantic comedy, they show you romantic comedies, but this is considered a horror movie, so it was like they were pumping out horror movie after horror movie, and I was like, wow, that, you know, I'd like to see all of these. They look pretty interesting.
I'm looking forward to the new Conjuring movie comes out on HBO Max on Friday.
It looks good because it has the, I don't know, like a, it HBO Max is fantastic. I love HBO Max. It's probably, I spend more time on there than any, but I don't know how long it'll last. Well, I guess till the end of the year where
this again.
Yeah,
they'll never get
but I do love the, you know, premiere. Like this weekend, at least tonight or tomorrow, me and Barb are gonna watch the Angelina Jolie movie that came out.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of HBO Max too. I think they're doing a great job. But
I just finished Titan season 2, and man, is that good! I love it. I love it because it takes like, it falls into my wheelhouse. Like, cause I don't want my movies or TV to be like the comic, but I want it to take elements of the comic. Like, I want it to take elements and then expand upon it and build its own thing. And that's what Titans does. I really, really, really liked what they did. Especially with the Jericho, Ravager, and Deathstroke stuff, it was, I thought, phenomenal.
Yeah, I thought it was very good.
Yeah, and I like how they do Jason Todd a lot too.
Yeah,
and I love the relationship that they had with Aqualad and Wonder Girl. I thought that was cool. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it definitely was a good
and the
season.
Hawk and Dove.
Looking forward to the new one.
I've always liked those two. Even the old school stuff, like, it's like, why are they brothers? Like, I can never figure it out. They were like light and day, man.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's like, how do they even coexist? Yeah,
yep.
I, I really enjoyed that, and the new season starts in August, so I'm kind of excited about that.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Because I don't know where the thing I love about it is, like, I don't know where they're going. The Superboy thing was great because
Yeah. Yeah.
I think they combined, like, all the Geoff Johns stuff that of Superboy, plus they threw in, like, New 52 stuff. Like, it was good. Like, it really worked. I just didn't like what they did with Garth because that whole brain thing was crazy.
I don't remember.
Cadmus did to him. They
Oh, you know what? Sorry, you mean Gar.
Gar, yeah, Gar.
I was thinking Aqualad.
Aqualad
Yep.
Garth, yeah. I
Yep,
said Gar, but it's Gar, yeah.
I gotcha. Yes. So I guess we should start covering something, huh?
Yeah. Who wants to
Yeah, we
go
had the
first?
collar jingle. I don't know if you guys heard that, but
That's the segment. Let's cut to segment.
yeah.
Perfect time.
It's time to take me for a walk, so you better get to the next segment.
Who wants to cover something first?
I can go. As long as I figure out where. I read. So I was listening to some. Well, I was listening to this podcast, DC Everything Else, where they cover DC comics that aren't superhero comics.
Never heard of it.
It's okay.
Yeah.
Can I interrupt it just a second? Because Rob, didn't the comic that he was Kirk was describing make you want to read it? Like I like so want to read that comic.
I think the way that he was describing it made me want to read it even more.
Yeah, it's like I really want to read this Binky.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh no, I'm with you. I don't know what the problem was with that one.
Yeah, I don't know, but go ahead. So there's this podcast.
I did check to see if you had guys had covered these on any that you'd done so far. So unless maybe by some coincidence your most recent we have some overlap, but I don't have any. So it reminded me that I had some Showcase presents of some of War Comics, which is kind of, unless you have the originals, is one of the only legal ways to read a lot of these War Comics, because they really haven't converted many of them digitally, it doesn't seem like. So I picked up I had picked up I mean literally grabbed Choke the Unknown Soldier Volume 2. And these are just the Unknown Soldier stories, so I'll cover two issues, because basically about the same length as a single issue. So those being, and it's kind of one story. So those being Star Spangled War Stories, 189 and 190, and these were written by David Michelinie with art by Jerry Tulloch. I don't know if that's how you say that. And they're called The Cadaver Gap Massacres and Project Omega. So it starts with the unknown soldier being briefed on his next mission. He's shown a film strip of some surveillance of a kind of shadowy new soldiers or creatures of some sort, some kind of weapon, doesn't seem to be human, that the Nazis have. So they send him in to figure out what's going on with that. And he does what he does. He creates a blockade of sorts in the Austrian Alps so that a car transporting Nazi major named Walheim has to stop. And he sends so he's the major sends a driver out, which is just like a common soldier of some sort, to unblock the road to take the like lo the logs and stuff that the unknown soldier put there. And then the unknown soldier, meanwhile, sneaks up behind and chokes the major, and uses disguise to take his place. He comes out of the woods, pretending that the major had just gone off to take a whiz, answer the call of nature, so to speak. So
Is
he's
that the
brought the
term you
rest.
use? Take a whiz. I need to go take a whiz.
But that's one I've heard, yeah.
No, but I was asked if you use it.
I think most of the time I just say I gotta go pee.
That's what I say.
Yeah. Take a whiz, take a leak.
Well, I guess the whiz thing could have been in the 70s when this came out, like a
Yeah,
higher
no,
use terms.
he says, "Do you believe the SS to be above even the calls of nature?"
Oh, see, he used the right term.
Yeah,
Yeah, he
the
didn't
right
use
term,
whiz.
okay.
That's what I'm going to start using. I need to go do the call of nature.
Answer at the call of
I'm going to
nature,
go answer the call of nature.
yeah. I say BRB bio. So he's taken to Castle Todesfall and introduced to Colonel Rolf. And Colonel Rolf is, takes particular pleasure in the experiments and technology they're developing at this castle. He demonstrates to soldier this new thing that they've got where basically let a bunch of resistance soldiers escape. The soldiers, the resistance, they think they've escaped on their own, but they're being allowed to so that the major can test this new weapon. He basically takes out this remote control looking thing and presses a button, and all these nozzles spring up out of the lawn, kind of like sprinklers, but they shoot flames out instead and basically burn all the bodies to a crisp. The soldier in the guise of the major is also introduced to the to Dr. Schofer, who is the scientist there, and we learn really quickly that he's there under not willingly. He his young daughter is there with him, and his daughter is basically the Nazis' leverage over him. I mean, he's a German soldier, or he's a German citizen. Who initially wanted to help the war effort, but as he's learned more about it, and about the Nazis, he, is only there because of, out of fear that they'll do something to his daughter. So basically from there, the unknown soldier, in his disguise tries to investigate what's going on at this castle and what the deal is with the inhuman soldiers that they saw in the surveillance. At one point he's eventually caught by the major in charge of the castle snooping, and they have a bit of a tussle, and the unknown soldier switches masks with them. So he becomes the major and puts the colonel mask on the major, and then basically sends the colonel out, sends the major, it disguises the colonel. He says that, that he'd proven to be a traitor, and it gives him a choice to flee for his life or take a bullet in the back of his skull. And he flees for his life, but then the unknown soldier subjects him to the same trap in the lawn with the fire that the resistance soldiers were subjected to. So the first story ends with the unknown soldier now disguised as the major that's in charge of this castle. But the doctor has resolved to kill him, you know, not knowing that the soldier is now disguised as him. He feels that he's got a gun and he feels that's the only way out of this situation. So the second story in the next issue, Project Omega, we get a couple pages of recap for new readers. And then just as the scientist is about to shoot who he thinks, who he doesn't know is the unknown soldier, a bunch of other Nazis arrive to basically to observe all of the experiments that are going on at this castle. And so that interrupts his attempt, and he is forced to show off these. Finally, we get to see these this weapon. And it turns out to be what look like really tall apes, but it turns out that they were originally human. It started when the scientist had been trying to find a way to make soldiers stronger. But the formula that he developed, though it made their bodies strong, it did so at the cost of their minds and transformed them and sort of de-evolved them. He feels now that it's, you know, wrong to subject human beings to this, even though, you know, they can be controlled by these electronic implants. So just as this is going on, the resistance, attacks the castle again. And so the soldiers, these ape-like soldiers are sent out to fight them. And really darkly, we see one of the Nazis, that have come to visit state that if this proves to be a success, that they can use, Jewish people as the raw material to create these soldiers. So the unknown soldier knows that time is of the essence, so he goes to break into the lab part of the building again, and that's where he encounters the scientist again, and the scientist takes another opportunity to kill who he still thinks is the one in control. He's not a soldier himself, though, so he's a real bad shot. He does take several shots, and the unknown soldier is able to evade, but he knows it's only a matter of time if he doesn't do something, so he pulls off his mask and reveals his real ravaged face to the soldier, or to the scientist, and of course it's, you know, shadowed. We don't see it ourselves. So he explains who he really is, why he's there, and the scientists, and he gets the scientists to find a way to short circuit the electronic controls, controlling the beasts. And so when he does that, the beasts go berserk and start attacking the Nazis as they, I'm assuming, identify them as the ones who did this to them. And so the unknown soldier helps the scientist, tries to help the scientist and the daughter escape, but the scientist ends up getting shot. So he tells the unknown soldier, please take my daughter and get her to safety. So the unknown soldier grabs the daughter, wraps his face up in some cloth so she's not frightened by him, and makes his escape. As they're running away, the castle explodes. Unknown soldiers left to try to protect this young girl. So resolves it somewhat, but has a nice hook going into the next issue. And And what's more is we have a four-panel epilogue where we see Rico Strada, who's the Nazi lieutenant that's been, prior to this, I understand, on the trail of the unknown soldier. And they see them going through the rubble the next day of the castle and finding one of the unknown soldier's masks. So you got another nice hook into the next issue there. So yeah, I really enjoyed these. These were really, really cool. It's, in black and white, because it's in the showcase, which I know, like, I agree with you, Mike, as you've said in the past, that these war comics are still nice to read in the black and white. And I just thought they had a nice made a nice use of the unknown, the his disguises were integral to the plot, and I thought it was a neat little story that doesn't a lot of DC comics from that tell stories in the World War II era that I haven't read a lot of them, but what I've read and what I've listened to you guys talk about, like, they did a good job of not sanitizing it so much that you still get the impact of the horrors of war,
Of war, yeah, exactly.
So.
And with the war comics and the horror ones, you don't really rely on color as much as you do with the superhero stuff, at least in my eyes, because the costume and stuff, you want to see the colors and how it pops. With where war is pretty much, doing just black and white, it doesn't affect it as much, in
Yeah,
my
I
opinion.
agree. Yeah, I totally agree with that. That's
Plus,
cool.
it's your like you made the good point of it's, unfortunately, it's the only trade or thing that you can get. I mean, we have few and far between. They recently came out with DC War as Hell hardcover, which had like the first Mademoiselle Marie and Sergeant Rock and Unknown Soldier stories, but you can't get a collection of that stuff. It's just some
Right.
random war stories.
Yeah. And I was looking at on DC Universe too, like hoping there was something on there, and there's hardly anything at all. They do have like older horror.
Yeah,
They do. You're right.
they're building out their House of Secrets and House of Mystery for sure. But I think in all fairness, they're stealing that stuff from they recently came out with a House of Secrets, House of Mystery omnibus in color. So it's like when they remaster those, it's like, oh, we have this digital content, we'll put that out there.
Where they
But
haven't.
the war stuff they haven't really touched.
Yeah, they
That's
haven't
what I
dealt
would
with
love to
that.
see, though, is just like, the House of Mystery Bronze Age that's been coming out and stuff, do the same thing with like our Army at War or GI Combat or something like that, where like even like the Masterwork or not the Masterworks, the archives, like Sergeant Rock archives,
Yeah,
I
they at
believe,
least
are
had
just the
those. Enemy
yeah,
Ace
but it's
Archive
just the
and
Sergeant
Sergeant
Rock
Rock.
part of the story, right? It's not
Yeah.
like the entire issue. Those are like impossible to find.
Yeah.
Yeah. They probably like try stuff and it just doesn't seem financially viable. Like, I don't think this DC thing like knocked their socks off in sales or we'd have something else. Because money talks. That's what
Yeah,
drives
it doesn't
things.
surprise me.
Yeah.
No. I mean,
I definitely
it
speak
hasn't helped.
from
Go ahead, Chris.
I was gonna say I'm definitely like going back to what we said earlier, like I'm definitely speaking from the point of view of what I would like to see, but also understanding, as Mike said, I'm not surprised necessarily, that given choice their choices, that they're not m might not invest a lot of resources in risk, getting the war comics on there.
No, and what I was going to say is I think the bar in the past few years has been set, past two at least 2 years has been set a little higher in terms of what it needs to make in terms of profit in order for them to go through, and I think that was largely due to
AT&T putting, you know, all their money into the HBO Max and stuff, and just, I mean, Mike, that's why we're getting new movies, you know, right to the app for no prices that or no extra charge, because it didn't do what they wanted it to do. So they're cutting everywhere, at least they had been cutting everywhere they can, because they weren't making the profit elsewhere. So
yeah, well, they sold their Warner too. So I
mean,
media.
So maybe
it's
going to be different now. Who knows? So depending on how this new company ends up going, but
well, it's I think they're still part of it though. I don't understand. That's like it's a sell off, but they own. They're forming a third party thing that's more focused on entertainment. It's like AT&T was telecommunications, and now let them focus, this other party focus on the entertainment side of the house. I just hope they don't change. Like I think that HBO Max out of the gate, I highly believe this, provides way more value, even though Disney Plus got more subscribers. Like Disney Plus is content. They don't have a lot. They just produce like really good content of what they have. But like HBO Max has a lot of content, incredible amount of content to keep you busy.
Well, it's got, yeah, I mean, Warner Brothers has been around since forever. That's, you know, the formation of the movie corporations, you know, the movie studios is one of the big ones, and they have that huge, huge catalog. So
yeah,
I agree with you. And especially if you're, you know, a family that doesn't have small children, it's like, yeah, I mean, there's a ton on there that I can, you know, that it's great with the kids and stuff because it has all the Disney movies, has everything else in there, in terms of like old, you know, old movies like Herbie and some of
Condor
those.
Man. Do they have Condor Man?
I don't know. I have to check to see.
Did you watch that as a kid?
I remember that. Yeah, Condor Man. Yeah, they just recently watched The Cat from Outer Space.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
Like, it's got, you know, those 70s Disney movies that weren't animated. Yeah, they got all those. And so, it, you know, they have stuff, but it's not that wide breadth of different types of genres.
Yeah.
Like HBO Max has.
Yeah, plus you get a lot of the. I don't know if you've seen Warrior yet, but God, that's incredible. If you want to see an awesome kung fu series, that is amazing. It's like Deadwood. What was that?
Sorry.
Was that a belch?
That was a belch of sorts. Yeah.
Yeah. Couldn't tell if it was a fart or belch, but
that
was right into the mic. So I was like, he must have put that near his ass. I don't know what he did.
Yeah, sorry about that. I have a new headset, which is a lot nicer than my old one. But the old one thing that was nice about it had like a convenient mute button on the cord itself.
Yeah.
So it was really easy to hit that, whereas this one doesn't have a mute button on it. I have to mute in Skype itself, which is just a matter of clicking with my mouse, but I'm not as quick with that yet.
Ah.
I feel
so,
like
Rob, did you want to go next?
Sure. Yeah. So I'm getting into reading some of the Captain America stuff kind of from the beginning. So I'm still in the Tales of Suspense era. So I'm going to do the Captain America part of the story from Tales of Suspense number 84. The cover features the Super Adaptoid. In the previous issue of 83, he fought the plain old Adaptoid. It had disguised itself first as Jarvis, and then
I actually remember this story. Yeah, this is
really
awesome. Yeah, this is good.
Yeah, and had then changed itself to Captain America, and this weird villain Tumblr had come along at the same time, and they ended up having to team up to defeat the Adaptoid. But they managed to secure the Adaptoid.
it's quote unquote unconscious. I'm not sure what that means for a robot, but it's deactivated, I guess. And at the beginning of this issue, issue 84, Cap had called the rest of the Avengers back to the mansion where this battle had taken place. And he wants to make them aware of the Adaptoid. So you've got Goliath, Hank Pym, the Wasp, and Hawkeye all showing up, and he takes them to the lab where the Adaptoid is secured. They kind of check it over, and Hank says, "Okay, as soon as I'm finish up, as soon as Jan and I finish up some of our adventures business, it'll only take a couple hours. I'll come back, and we'll start kind of doing a detailed study here." And Hawkeye says, "Okay, sounds good. I've got to go meet Black Widow, but as soon as I'm done, I'll come back as well." So Cap says, "Thanks. Okay, all set." He's gonna kind of hang out. Now, in the meantime, as they were standing around the Adaptoid, it wasn't deactivated. It was kind of just hibernating, but actually using its abilities to kind of record all of the Avengers' strengths and abilities. So after the rest of the Avengers leave, Cap's kind of just hanging out in the mansion. And he suddenly gets attacked. He hears it just in the nick of time, and an arrow he manages to block with his shield. And he turns around, and there's this giant green figure that holds a bow and arrow. He has kind of a Cap outfit, but kind of a Hawkeye mask. Has wings, a quiver, and a giant shield. And this is now, he calls himself the Super Adaptoid because now he's managed to absorb all four of their powers. And what
Very
informs
much like a mazo,
exactly like that.
right?
Yeah. Yes, exactly like that. And what happens now? Now keep in mind these are only like 10 page stories because it's shared at the time it Tales of Suspense shared space with Iron Man. And what ensues
And
is
what,
this
hey Rob,
amazing
wh
app.
why did they share space?
Oh, because I'll tell you, because
Yeah, I
at the time, they had to rely on competitors for distribution of their magazines,
And who was that
and they were,
competitor?
I believe it was DC,
Yeah.
National Periodicals, and they only allowed them so many to distribute so many titles, so they had to buddy up, which is why so many of their titles had two features.
Yep,
Like Tales
that's
of Astonishment,
exactly
Tales of
it.
Suspense. Yeah. See, we
Fascinating,
super
really,
here.
because they came out of the gate swinging, but they couldn't dedicate the titles that they wanted to their own books.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But this is an incredible battle that really, honestly, takes place from page three of the story all the way to the very end. There's not a lot that I can say to to describe short of going panel by panel, and that would be boring. But they make an absolute mess of the mansion. You see the Adaptoid has, as I said, a giant shield. They're going at it, punching back and forth. Captain America is quickly realizing that he may be in trouble because it not only does it have all of the powers of the other three Avengers, but it has all of Captain America's skill as well, plus the extra strength that comes from like a person like Goliath. So he knocks him down, the Adaptoid rather knocks Cap down, and Cap needs to take kind of a breath, and so he kind of tricks the Super Adaptoid into flying. He kind of goads him into flying up into the air, but he does grab Cap at the same time. Now, even though that's the case, he does get a few seconds to kind of recover and rest. So the problem, I mean, that's a good thing, but the problem is now he's way up high in the sky with no way to really get down. So he starts struggling with the Adaptoid. He manages to use his shield to kind of knock the wings off of the Adaptoid,
and they start plummeting to the ground. And Cap is planning on waiting to the last second to let go, and he's going to jump in the water. But the Adaptoid is not so easily defeated because he, as they are plummeting, the Adaptoid reaches out and actually grabs onto the bridge tower that they're near, overlooking the water. And so it kind of grabs onto it. He stops his fall. Cap manages to get a few feet away from the Adaptoid and starts climbing to get away from it. But the Adaptoid, as I said, is not only skillful but strong. And when he realizes that he can't quite reach Cap, he grabs the part of the bridge tower itself and just rips the entire thing away and throws it across in, you know, across the water. At that point, Cap's in real trouble. He ends up realizing that he's going to go splat any moment. So he kind of puts his shield out as almost like a way to direct his fall, and manages to get out from over land to back over sea. It's a near thing because he actually, as he's twisting, he almost goes directly above a freighter ship, which would be just as painful to land on, but he manages to maneuver at the last second and misses the boat by just a few feet and lands in the water. The Adaptoid thinks that he's succeeded, that he's defeated Captain America, which was his original task. He tries to call it in to AIM, which AIM, if you do not know, actually built the Adaptoid, but he's getting no response. Little does he know that in Strange Tales, Nick Fury has just put an end to AIM, at least for the time being. And so that's why the Adaptoid's not getting any reply. So he kind of flies off on his own. And then the last few panels, you see Cap, first just his hands and then his head popping up out of the water. So he's not dead, but that's certainly not going to be the last that we hear of the Super Adaptoid. And it does not, that line of story does not continue in the next, at least not in the very next issue, because I kind of looked ahead and it looks like he fights Batroc in the next issue. But I'm sure it will be only a matter of time before we see the Adaptoid come back, because he really did handle Cap very well all by himself. And there wasn't much that Cap was able to do. And he just managed to stay alive. So, yeah,
This was
I actually,
84, right?
this was 84 that I covered. I actually have the first couple volumes of Captain America Masterworks. So that's how I'm reading the Tales of Suspense issues. And then once I get to Captain America, America proper, I'll start
You could
reading my
switch to singles, yeah.
the single issues. Yeah.
Yeah, this it's weird with this one 'cause I remember this story, but so I immediately went to my recording sheet to see if I read this, and I have no record of it reading, but I remember it. And there's no way I can there's I this happens a lot, so I sometimes I forget to record stuff that I read, especially when I'm in Albuquerque, but I could have sworn I read this 'cause I
You
remember
think
the
it's about a
Alfred
kid's
thing,
chili
and
or something, or
I remember the Super Adaptoid.
it was cool because, you know, I mean, you know, now in present time you're like, yeah, the Super Adaptoid, Super Adaptoid. But it was kind of cool to see from one issue to the next, you know, him transform from just the plain old Adaptoid, which was more limited, to the Super Adaptoid that we kind of all knew,
Yeah.
you know, in the present. Yeah, pretty neat.
Cool. Well, like always, I'm gonna take all the stuff that everybody wants to listen to, like Unknown Soldier and Captain America, and I'll throw it down the toilet with some 90s goodness. stuff that people don't care about. But I want to talk about Awesome Comics. So Awesome Comics was like the third attempt by Rob Liefeld and producer Jeff Loeb. He was producing it along with another guy, Michael Rosenberg, which was of Platinum Studios. They formed this company in 1997, well, 1996, but then it they started publishing material in 1997, called with the Awesome label, and it didn't last very long. It went from 1997 to the year 2000, and then we had a big delay, and then that became Arcade Comics, which lasted probably less than a year. So yeah, he hasn't had a lot of success outside of Extreme, and I don't know why that is, but I think it's because of bringing in third parties into his publishing scheme to invest in. And I know one of these schemes, and I don't know which, if it's Awesome or if it's Arcade. For some reason, he doesn't want to talk about this, like in his own podcast and observations. And I don't know why, if it's like held up in legalities, or if he doesn't find it that interesting, or he finds that that was one of the biggest mistakes he did. But somewhere along the line, he lost the rights to Youngblood and several of his other properties.
That's somewhat recent, right? When that happened?
No, I think it was with Arcade. Like, it
Oh,
happened a long
okay.
time, and then it was held up, and then the person that got the rights sold them to another guy who took the rights to like Elementals,
Yeah.
which
Yeah.
you've talked about in the
I
past.
love the elementals, but
Yeah.
this guy that he sold it to seems to have a very bad
Oh,
reputation
he
with.
has a horrible reputation. He was supposed to launch something, but he seems pretty defunct. For a while there, he was very prolific in posting that he was coming out with comics, and I think it's like Rev, or I don't know what he is, like
Yeah,
something
I
Rev.
think that's his
He,
name or
yeah,
something.
yeah,
Yeah.
he was gonna come out with a comics line, and he was talking about Elementals at one point. He actually bought the Elementals early on, because do you remember those Elementals specials, like the sexual ones, when they became like more like porn comics?
Yeah.
Well, Rev was responsible for them, because I opened them up, and I saw his name. I think it's like Andrew Rev or something like that. I
That
don't know
sounds right.
exactly,
That sounds right.
but I saw that he was associated with those, because I was like, how did the Elementals turn into this? Like the lingerie issue and the sex issues, and I'm like, how did it turn from what it started off as to this? And I was always curious, and I saw his name associated with it. But anyway, he owns like Youngblood and a couple other things. But I want to talk about the Ian Churchill and Jeff Loeb created. I think it's mostly created by Ian Churchill, and Jeff Loeb kind of assisted with the plot. And this is volume two of The Coven. And The Coven is a group of, well, you think Coven, it's a group of witches. Well, in this case, it's a group of heroes, but they're all different. It consists of Black Mass, who's a guy who can control his like density, like the vision. It has Scratch. Didn't you talk about Scratch recently, Rob, or am I thinking of somebody else? I think Scratch was.
I did, but it wasn't, I don't think it's the same.
Yeah, it's not the same character, but you
No,
we
I
were
can't remember
we
who what I was
we were
covering.
we were talking about Scratch, because it was during the Vision and Scarlet Witch stuff, I think. And you had covered a book, and
Yeah, I
there was
did.
a
Was it a four? Oh,
Scratch.
it was Fantastic Four. It was a
Yeah, yeah,
Fantastic
yeah.
Four that went
Agatha
to a village.
Harkness, because
Yeah.
people were speculating on Scratch being part of the Vision and Scarlet Witch TV show. That's what it was. And
That's right.
we knew Agatha had already appeared, and people were speculating on Scratch. Well, this is a different Scratch, and there's even another Scratch in DC. Like, you could type Scratch, and there was a comic book called Scratch. But this is a possessed priest who battles demons, and then there's Phantom, or Phantom, who's was spelled with an F, and she's a very sexy vampire. And Spellcaster, she's the one that's sort of like a witch that can cast spells. And Phenomena, which is a college student with the ability to see supernatural. Well, this book here is the second volume, so it's like you're thrown in to a situation where they're going to the grave of one of their teammates that was killed. and they get invaded by a bunch of like mystical ninjas, and I don't know where they came from or if they were in the previous series, but they start attacking the coven and battling them, and it leads to like spellcaster like porting them away, and she ports them. This is the part of the story I really wanted to read, and I own the story, but unfortunately, when I bought this story, I was missing it, so I don't know where my number two is. Like, I have a record that I own it, but I didn't buy these at the same time, so they're not next to each other. So I couldn't figure out when she ported them. Oh, I know what happened. Black Mass had a run-in with a character called Satana, and her father's Lucifer. And she has a plot where she wants to hire the coven to invade a lair. She doesn't tell them whose lair they want to invade, but she says, "I need you to take an artifact for me, and then, I'll set you guys free." Well, it turns out that the artifact is in Supreme's home, so they port over. Spellcaster takes them over, and they're in Supreme's home, and he's like, "What are you doing in my house? Get out of here!" And so, like, it's gonna be a battle, and worlds collide with Coven versus Supreme. So, I wanted to know what happens because I like Supreme. I wanted to see what he's gonna do to these guys, but I'd have to find the next issue and see what's
A
going
lot of
on. I
these
have an I
awesome comics look really interesting to me.
Yeah, the Fighting American is really cool. You got Evangeline and several other titles. Some of them were written by Alan Moore. That's when Supreme and Judgment Day
Yeah.
came out, and Glory and Youngblood. So, yeah, you had big creators in there, definitely, because Alan Moore did like Judgment Day and Supreme. So,
I like it. Ian Churchill's art as well.
yeah, and I really wish Rob would talk about that. Like, how the hell do you get someone like Alan Moore to do your work? Like,
Yeah,
it
sure.
just seems like light and day. And Rob has got like really indie creators, like when he did Glory and he did Prophet for later on with Image, he got like really big indie creators to write and draw his books. So like I don't and they definitely take it in a different direction than Rob would have ever done. So I don't understand like how he does this, but or how he
Yeah.
even hooked up with Alan Moore, but
I mean,
it
it is
would be
interesting
interesting.
because I think when you think of, for good or bad, I mean, it's fine, but you think of the original image creator. I mean, obviously, because they were artists, you think of art first and then the storyline, whereas later he's getting all these like premier writers for a lot of this stuff, which is super interesting.
Yeah, he had a lot of stuff, and I've been trying to buy all of Rob's, all of Todd's, all of Silvestri's, everything that happened with the initial creators, because I just love that stuff. And I don't know why the 90s are so big, but they introduced me to Image and Valiant. I think it's because I like expanded outside of DC.
DC.
And then DC was doing like the death of Superman and breaking Batman's back, and it felt so innovative, and Hal Jordan was a drunk, and I was in college and reading this stuff, and I was like, wow, things are different now.
Yeah.
And I liked it, and I liked the diversity of it. I liked that I could go to Triumphant Comics and read sci-fi, and Ultra Comics was coming out in Malibu, and it was like an explosion of publishers, and I dug it because I was there at the ground floor.
Yep.
So yeah, this stuff means a lot to me. And Ian Churchill, man, He's a hell of an artist in this book. This book looks beautiful. I mean, it looks way better than a
Yeah,
lot
the
of
covers alone
stuff.
look great.
Yeah, it's. Well, look at the cover of the one I have has that's a phantom on the cover, the vampire, and she's wearing like a red outfit. Because
Yeah,
this is
that
volume
you got
two.
said the
Yeah,
main
isn't that a
cover, the
great
one.
cover? I mean,
Yeah,
that's
it's
a
amazing.
awesome cover.
Yep.
And the interiors, like sometimes you'll see artists like that kick ass on the cover, and then
Yeah.
their interiors just aren't as good as their covers.
Yeah.
And this is not the case. The interiors are just as beautiful as what you see on the cover. So
Awesome.
yeah, it's. I love this stuff, and I love like dead universes, and I love like how things came about, and. So yeah, this is right up my alley. And I just wish I could find the next one. And I went to go to the box to see if I could to find it easily because I wanted to see what happened with Supreme. And Supreme is drawn here like he looks very muscular. But yeah, there I think I finished Rejects and but I don't think like there's a an advertisement for Deity in here. And I'm not sure what that is. And I just
I'm
realized
familiar with
there's.
that property, but it doesn't look like it ever came through awesome. I think it was.
Well, there's a couple of things that they advertise in these books that never happened. So, like, you could go
Huh.
do your research and says, well, that looks interesting. And it just never happened.
Interesting.
Yeah, he's weird as a creator because he pumped out a lot of titles, but not a lot of not a lot of titles within the same like with Eric Larson and Rob and you always and Jim Lee, they were more regular, and Rob's stuff was like I'll just throw out a bomb of all this new stuff, but then you'll only have like 4 issues of one and then 2 issues of another and
Yeah, a lot. There could be a lot of different reasons for that, but I mean, it could be that like he'd just be super excited and full of ideas, and he'd get a new idea and just can't wait to get this new idea out. And some of the old stuff could have fallen by the wayside, or it could have been more business related, reasons. Who
Well,
knows?
yeah, he has some interesting stories too with like artists because you'll hear the terms of like ghost artists, and Extreme became so big like when they launched that his artists or his artists at Extreme, they could not keep up with like the demand, so they went overseas and they would like market other artists and then they would not get credited but they would be ghosting a style, they would basically get hired to draw like this. And I've seen that actually because Zach, who's the artist on my comic book, I saw him at a convention once and he was drawing a book and I'm like, wow, you're drawing this? And I said, that doesn't even have your name on it. And he goes, yeah, I'm kind of a ghost artist for my friend. And I'm like, wow,
Huh.
that's just a strange thing.
It is.
So, yeah, there's a lot of behind the scenes stuff that's pretty interesting. But yeah, that's what I had. Coven number one, volume two.
Cool. That's a good one.
All right, well, I'll continue my same theme from my other one in a different showcase with Men of War number one.
Oh, this is one of my favorites. Gravedigger.
So yeah, this so this showcase I believe has the full issues because it's Men of War, not the specific properties, but it pretty much is, as you said, Mike, looking through the table of contents, it's pretty much Gravedigger, and then either Enemy Ace or Dateline Frontline.
Those are Dateline Frontline and Enemy Ace were the backups. So Gravedigger was always like the primary story, and then you'd have an Enemy Ace or Dateline Frontline. Dateline Frontline is one that I experienced, and it's really good because it's like a reporter behind the enemy lines.
That showed up starting with issue 4, sorry. And there were some issue number one's a 35-cent book. There were some 50-cent books mixed in where they would have a little bit, it would be a little bit bigger and have three stories in it. But I went ahead and read issue number one, though, which was Gravedigger and Enemy Ace. Codename Gravedigger was again written by David Michelinie, but the art this time was with was Ed Davis and Romeo Tangel, with Jerry Serpy as the colorist. Of course, this is showcasing really experience his work here.
David Michelinie was very prolific. Like, he wrote so many war stuff, plus he wrote Amazing Spider-Man
Todd McFarlane,
and his Spider-Man is like my favorite Spider-Man is the Michelinie stuff. And then his Iron Man, he wrote it during the Bob Layton years too.
Yep, he did. Yeah.
So he was the bomb back in the day, man.
I mean, for us growing up at the time, and he was writing those, the big properties.
Yeah, he was great.
He was the first Spider-Man writer I ever read. That's where I first knew him from. Codename Gravedigger, it's issue number one. So this is our introductory story to him. Gravedigger, he is a soldier named Hazard. And basically, this takes place again in World War II, and they are a basically grave detail. His squad, they are all black men that were basically put on that squad because of their race. So when it starts out, they're in southern France in summer of 1942. They're basically stuck with shovels and pickaxes. They're supposed to be there just to bury bodies, but they're like kind of taking cover in a dugout area, because the area's being fired on.
But the reason behind these things, like historically, is crazy, because they would storm the beach. They'd have all these bodies that would get killed, and they didn't want to affect the morale of the next people that were storming the beach, so the gravediggers would come in and clear the area, which, I mean, just the whole idea of that is insane to me.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's, as one of the other soldiers says to Hazard, he says, come on, they can't give us darkies real weapons. Well, we might accidentally shoot our toes off. And then who'd dance for the officer's mess? That's a guy named Bogan that says that. And then there's another guy with them who has a stutter I know that we get his name. Bogan calls him Stutter Mouth. Andy is his name. So they hear a woman scream from a farmhouse nearby, and Bogan's like, well, so what, we're non-combatants, let the real soldiers do the, before he can finish his sentence, Hazard is off running to see what's going on. So we switch into the farmhouse, and it's you know, a French woman and her family, and Nazi soldiers, and you know, she's putting up resistance just in her, you know, her attitude, by screaming and drawing attention, and you know, they're one of the soldiers like, perhaps I should teach her how to act like a lady. And that's when Gravedigger comes crashing through the window with his shovel, and the Nazis underestimate him again because of the color of his skin and the fact that he's alone. You know, he fights them, takes them out just with his shovel in his hands, even as they're firing on him, is able to knock them all out. Almost. He doesn't see one soldier, and he's almost fired on. But Andy, the guy with the stutter, turns out to have followed along, and he knocks out the guy that's going to shoot them. American troops show up, the American lieutenant that basically gives all the credit to the French civilians, Andy tries to correct him, he says, and the lieutenant puts him on report, and you know, Hazard, he's a little more you know, knowledgeable, or understands the situation a little bit more, and he's like, just, you know, that's okay, Andy, he's not gonna understand. And the lieutenant tells him to return to their duties, or he's gonna put them up on insubordination. And at first Hazard does response without saying sir, and he's has to repeat what he said and dress him properly. We get some backstory, basically a couple pages of backstory. We learn like more about Hazard's history and how he grew up in Birmingham, Alabama, and he had polio, and that made him work even harder to, you know, overcome his difficulties and train in the martial arts. And he enlisted in the army, and excelled at shooting. Because he was black, he basically had to, he was always put on latrine duty, and regardless of that, he did everything that was assigned to him to the best of his ability. Ultimately, you know, was put on grave digging duty. So the next day, that's what they're doing. They come on fire. A Nazi plane comes through, boom, and fires on them. And Andy pushes the lieutenant down so that he doesn't get hit by fire. The lieutenant says there's no cover anywhere near for 100 yards. If that plane takes another pass, we're done for. And Hazard grabs a bazooka, and the lieutenant says, you're crazy, nobody can hit a plane, a moving plane, with a bazooka. Well, we know at this point that Hazard is quite a shot, and he says, maybe I am crazy, lieutenant, but I'm also damn good. And he, blafoom, he makes the shot, of course. He's like, well, what do you know? I did it. Do you hear that, Andy? I did it, old buddy. And then he turns around and he finds that that Andy has been shot. Andy is dead. And Lieutenant says, I'm sorry if there's anything I can do. And it says, yeah, there's something you can do. You can transfer me to a combat unit so I can do what I joined up to do, and I can end this war a little sooner. And maybe there'll be a few less Andys to bury. And the lieutenant says, well, I'm sorry, that's actually out of the question. That's just a matter of policy. And Gravedigger says, I understand that I saved this, that this man saved your life and you owe him. And the sergeant says, well, I understand that, and I'll give him the highest commendation possible. And then he says, I'm now leave you guys to finish up, and you know what to do. And basically telling them it's, you know, keep digging the graves. And Gravedigger says, yeah, I know exactly what to do. And he's carrying Andy's dead body. And later, it's not real clear who it is, but someone goes to wake up Sergeant Hazard, and his bed is made, and obviously he's not in it. Basically, Graveyard has decided to go off on his own, and it's quite a cliffhanger. We don't really know, you know, what he is gonna do, because we see him outside of we see him by a sign that says Pentagon with a bag and a grenade in it. He says, I guess I'll just have to... He says, well, some of those blue-nosed bureaucrats won't listen when I tell them what I can do. Then, by God, I guess I'll just have to show them. And it says, but show them what? Find out next month. You know, so, I mean, we know that he's, you know, we know his principles. So, you know, it's not likely that he's going to throw a grenade at American soldiers. So it's, what is he actually up to? It's, have to wait and find out. So the backup, it's a shorter story, Enemy Ace, and it's created and written by Bob Kaniger, inked by Juan Ortiz, pencils by Ed Davis again. And I actually, you know, it's called The Hammer of Hell. Although that's Enemy Ace is the Hammer of Hell, and it's called Death is a Wild Beast. And it's storytelling was a little strange. I mean, it kind of starts out, so as the name implies, Enemy Ace, it's about a German pilot. There's a man. It starts out with a man who pulls a gun on Enemy Ace, and Enemy Ace stares him down. Basically, the man takes a shot and just hits the goggles that he's holding in his hand. It's a pilot who's kind of like lost his mind a little bit that fires on him. And that after that happens, the Enemy Ace just Von Hammer, he just holds out his hand, and the other pilot gives him the gun. He says, "No, forgive me, I don't know what came over me. See my best friends crash to their deaths day after day." So that kind of gives us an insight as to this guy, Lieutenant Kessel, it seems his name is, he's kind of just hit a breaking point. So the Enemy Ace, he takes the Lieutenant Kessel's own goggles, since his own are shattered, to use, and goes up in his plane. There's And when he's up there, he's wondering if he's having a nightmare, a hallucination, because he sees a another pilot pursuing him with a helmet that has like a wild boar almost like sculpted into it, and is pursuing him, and he ends up in a situation where he's like basically if he pauses to attack this Allied bomber that he sees ahead of him, then the wild boar pilot will be in position to kill him. But if he doesn't shoot on the bomber, then the bomber is going to drop bombs on their lines, and so he doesn't know which to do. And so what he ends up doing is he fires on the bomber in such a way that it creates this black plume of smoke, and then he uses that as cover to disappear from his pursuer and come out of the smoke at an unexpected angle and fire on the other plane, on his pursuer. He lands thinking about how it's kill or be killed in the disguise of war. And the next day, you know, someone, this guy that works on the like planes and stuff, telling him maybe he should take a break after what happened yesterday. And enemy ace dismisses that, then a Allied plane comes flying through and fires on the area that they're in, and it looks like maybe the guy that was just talking to enemy ace gets killed. And with the backdrop of flames, the enemy ace thinks, am I hallucinating? Because it looked like to him that it was the same plane with the soldier with the boar helmet that fired on him, and he thought that he had killed him. So, I think the codename Gravedigger, I think that that's like a really, like you said, it's a fascinating aspect of war, that there were these units that did that, and I wasn't aware of that. And so it's a real interesting take on, for a war story, for, you know, for the protagonist. And made me interested to see where that would be going. Looking at it a little, the first time I was kind of confused by the way that the enemy ace story started, because I didn't really get what was going on with the situation. But I, having to explain it now, I feel like I understand a little bit better. So not a bad backup, you know. With limited amount of pages, they did a pretty good job of telling a complete story, so with a cliffhanger. So good stuff. Thanks, everything else in podcast, for inspiring me to read some more comics.
Rob?
Oh, yes. Hang on one moment. My wife is texting me.
Are you doing that podcast again?
Let's go to the comic shop. That's what she's saying. Let's go. Get some bubble tea.
She is always asking. Gonna go to Pulp 716. Okay, so my next one is The House of Mystery number 280. And it's got a trio of tales in this one. Hosted by, of course, Kane as usual. The first story is called Twice Killed Corpse by George Kashtan and art by Rico Rival.
You must have been listening to everything else also.
I was very inspired to read some horror with this. And so this one starts out with this guy. He's swimming out, I don't know, the ocean, whatever. It doesn't make a difference. But they say that he's taking a leisurely swim, but then the undercurrent starts getting him. It says out to sea, so I guess he's in the ocean. And he starts getting dragged under, and he starts seeing, like, visions of, you know, whatever, you know, like, whether they're your things that, you know, reflecting in your life or what have you. But seeing this guy with a torn shirt strangling this woman and then running away, and he says, I feel like I know him, and yet how could I? And he goes under, and he thinks he's done for, but he ends up getting trapped in a trawling net, and it gets pulled up by a fisher boat, and they get him out of there. He is okay, and he goes on his way, and he's still trying to figure out who this brute was that he saw in his last conscious moments. So the story says that for weeks it gnawed in his brain and gave him no relief, and he's like, well, maybe if I go through some of my old clothes and papers I stashed away, I'll find a clue. And he's looking at newspapers, and he's like, oh, the Boardington. He's like, I don't remember ever going there, but why don't I go there and take a look? So he goes and visits, starts walking around, and realizes that all of the houses look familiar to him, and even some people. And sees that there's an institution there. He goes and knocks on the door of the chief guard. It's the middle of the night, and the guy opens up the door, quite annoyed. But when he sees our protagonist, he becomes quickly frightened. He tells him to stay back, and he pulls out a rifle and says, stay back or I'll shoot. And before you know it, our protagonist, Paul, rips the rifle out of his hand and strangles this man to death. And he goes running off, very confused as to why he suddenly had an urge to kill. He doesn't understand. He's running through the woods. The rest of the guards had come to see that this chief guard had been strangled. They run off after Paul, and they shoot him several times in the back. He starts crawling towards a pool of water, and he looks into the reflection and notices that his face is the same as the brute's. And he then remembers back to when he ended up breaking out of this institution and falling off of a cliff into some water, and it had given him amnesia. And the irony here is supposed to be that if he had been curious about his past, he wouldn't have died coming back. But for me, it was kind of confusing, because this whole story made it seem like he had just escaped, fallen, gotten amnesia, and that's where we picked up at the beginning of the story, with him out at sea and then being rescued and so on and so forth. But the guards that shot him and killed him here says, you know, weird, isn't it? He made his successful escape years ago. Why'd he come back? But that's not the impression that I got reading the story. So I was a little taken back by, like, why did he suddenly, I guess because he was drowning, that he suddenly got these recollections. I'm not quite sure, but it was okay nonetheless. There's a quick one-page story, cartoon by Sergio Aragonés with Gregory the Gargoyle, with some of the mascots like Cain Abel, and it looks like one of the witches going up for a balloon ride, and Gregory the Gargoyle is upset because there's no room for him. He flies up on his own to join them. They're all cheering and happy, and then he ends up sitting on top of the hot air balloon, to the dismay of everyone, and putting a hole in it. But then the last thing you see is all of Cain Abel, the witch, all still in their basket, and the basket is tied around Gregory the Gargoyle, and he's flying them around. He's upset, and they're all having a great time. The second full story is The Hungry Jaws of Death by Carl Wessler and art just by last names here, Merrick and Bulanadi. So apparently the artist.
It sounded like you were going to sing there.
You were Bulanadi! Like,
ula, ula, ula.
So there's this guy here in this village called Colonel Kuza, and he rules the village, this I'm guessing, like, Eastern European village. It's in a fake country called Romania, not Romania, but Romania. And he makes the villagers come and bring him tribute every so often. I don't know what the increment is. So his pets don't kill them. And he's got these strange monsters as pets. Every time they have to give him what money they have to spare, or he'll sick his monsters on him. So after he's collected, he sends these monsters back into this painting that he owns. He says, back into the painting, my pets, until I need you again. And so he's yelling at the villagers that, you know, this will remind everybody that I have the power to kill you all if you don't listen to what I say. So it turns out one of his servants, it says his most trusted servant, wishes to end up leaving him, and it's because of he's deathly afraid of these monsters in the painting. He's convinced that someday they'll devour him too. So this Colonel Kuza wants to put his trusted servant at ease. And he says, don't worry, there's a secret. He said, I have sorcery that only makes them appear alive. They leave the painting and do my bidding, but it's just power of suggestion. They have no actual, you know, power to do anything to people. So his servant still is now just as upset, because he knows that he's taking the villagers for fools and believes that Colonel Kuzo is just as bad as ever. So, of course, inevitably, he goes down to the village and he tells everyone the secret of the painting, and that there's no power behind these monsters. So they all, next time he goes to collect tribute, no one, not even one person, gives him any tribute. So he becomes very angry, and he accuses the monsters in the painting of betraying him, and that he's going to burn the painting to cinders. He pulls something, a log out of the fireplace to burn the painting down, and before you know it, these monsters escape the painting without him even summoning them, and they chase Colonel Kuza to a cliff ledge, where he falls and plummets to his death. And obviously, the irony is that he knew very well that these creatures had no power to actually harm somebody, but he was so scared that he actually caused his own death. And then the last story is a professor who's actually trying to tap into the power of lightning to use for energy to help the world. So he starts, he's doing a final test. And if it goes well, he'll be able to harness lightning for fuel. And then, you know, it could help the whole world. And this one is by George Kashtan again. And the art this time is by Dick Ayers. So when he is about to start the experiment, a strange lightning being comes down and starts berating him that he doesn't want him to do this, that he is the god of lightning, Carnu, and lightning has been used for eons to terrorize people, and that it is unacceptable that he's turning lightning into a quote-unquote friend of man. So briefly, the professor gets a knock on the door and asks if and the woman asks if they're ready for the test. He said, "Oh yes, yes, but you know, you better go by yourself. I'll be there with you." And so anyhow, he starts talking more to this Carnu, and he says, "You know, I know that you're not anybody. I know that you're just some person in a trick costume. So get out of here." And he pulls out a gun, but Carnu lightning bolts the gun into oblivion, and now the professor realizes that this is really a Lord of Lightning. The lightning god ends up taking control of him, and he goes running out into he's like inhabiting him, but the professor still has some agency of his own, and he goes running out into the storm where this test was going to be, and he starts climbing this tower, which he shouldn't be doing. That's where the lightning test is going to happen. All the controls are safe indoors, and everyone else can see him through the window that he's just climbing this tower, lightning zapping it. And he shouts out for his assistants to throw the switch. And even though they think he must be mad, they do. And it draws the lightning god out of the professor and totally dissipates him. And at that point, he's now free to continue his research. And so that's the end of this particular issue. And it has the DC feature page with the Answer Man at the back of this one, which I always used to love, you know, reading these. The questions, sometimes they're just questions about what's coming up. Here's one in particular that's an interesting one. Somebody asks, is there any chance, now this came out in 1980, is there any chance for a Batman movie? And the Answer Man says, sure is. It's in the works for release in 1981. And before you ask, this will be done seriously, not campy like the 60s TV show. So we did get that, but it was about 8 years late, apparently, in 1989, I believe it came out, right? Didn't Batman come out in 1989?
Yes.
Yeah, so that was interesting that in 1980 they were working.
Which I think there's going to be a comic book about now, Batman 1989 and Superman 1978.
Yeah, I saw that. But yeah, so it was you know, I always loved reading the Answer Man. So this was a good. I always like reading House of Mysteries, Unexpected, you know, all of those the horror anthologies. Some stories are better than others, but I always have an entertaining time.
Yeah. It's good stuff. Are you buying that Eerie Kickstarter?
No, I'm not. I okay. just, I, you know, obviously.
You're getting enough with the creeps, huh?
Yeah, that's enough for me.
Yeah. And Miss Vampirous Camellia.
Yeah, Vampirous Carmilla. Yeah, I get her too. So we get something every month that way.
Yep. So my next book, it's making me go down rabbit holes because I like it so much. It's one of my favorite movies of all time, with Brandon Lee, Bruce Lee's son, and it's called The Crow. And I learned about The Crow in reverse order. I went to go see the movie, and I didn't have Caliber's comic book. But I was able to procure the Tundra version, which is a second print.
Oh, okay.
Tundra was launched by either, was it Peter Laird or the other guy? It was one of the Ninja Turtle creators, the one that didn't use his money as well as the other one, created a comic book company off of his riches called Tundra. And he reprinted the original James O'Barr comic book called The Crow. And as part of my fascination, again, with the 90s, I wanted to complete Todd McFarlane's books, but not only Todd McFarlane's books, but everything that Todd McFarlane published under his Image imprint. And one of those was The Crow. And I am missing two issues, and I'm going to buy them on my comic book shop. because I read this and I'm like, wow, this is really cool. This is by John J. Muth, and the artist is Jamie Tolagson. And I don't know who the color artist is or if it's just the art. The color artist is Mark Nicholas. He does an interesting thing because it almost looks black and white, but it's not black and white. In other words, you could see blues and other colors in this. It's just so toned down that it looks like it's black and white. It's very dark, muted color scheme. And I didn't know what to expect with this, and I imagine that issues 1 through 3 are sort of the main story, and then I don't know what 4 and ongoing issues are going to do. And what I mean by the main story is basically what the movie's adapted by is Eric and his soon-to-be wife, Shelley, are totally in love with one another. And they get killed by a bunch of criminals in Chicago. Or no, is it Detroit? I can't remember if it's Detroit or Chicago on a Devil's Night.
When was the last time you saw the movie? I haven't seen it in so I have it. I own it, but I haven't seen it in so long.
Probably about 5 years ago.
Oh, okay.
This The Crow has spawned like multiple movies. I think there's 3 or 4 of them. The two that are main are The Crow and The Crow City of Angels. Those are the ones I always remember. And then there's some other ones that came after that. And then there was a TV show that actually came along with that. And
I remember I saw it in the theater when it came out, and I don't think I've seen it since.
great soundtrack too, by the way.
Yes, I have the soundtrack.
Yeah, I have it on CD and it's
Yeah, me
amazing.
too.
It is such a cool. The villains in the show are just as interesting as much as the Crow himself. But it's you had names like Tintin, Top Dollar, Skank, T-Bird, and they had like fired up, fired up. Like if you remember the movie, they would do like crazy shit. They were very violent. They killed Eric's fiance Shelley, and there's a little girl in the movie and also a detective that play a major part. Sarah is kind of like a kid that just wanders the street. She's a little girl that wanders the street, and she's sort of like Eric's best friend outside of Shelley herself. And Eric and Shelley are both killed, but Eric comes back as the Crow and seeks vengeance on this gang that killed his fiance and killed him. And Sarah serves as like you see through her eyes like the Crow, plus her mother is a drug addict. Like in the movie you'll see him go visit one of the villains and he's sleeping with the mother and they're injecting heroin. And there's such a classic line. I used to remember every line by heart because I just love this movie. But he goes to see Sarah's mom, and I can't remember. It's like innocence is the something of all children. I can't remember what he does, but he's like sucks the heroin right out of her body, the Crow does, and he's like, "You gotta clean up," and then he kills Tintin or one of the guys that's there. I can't remember which one. But what this is it's sort of like a retelling of the original James O'Barr story. And I actually love it so I love it so much. I mean, it really is a piece of art, comic book, and it is one of the best comic book to film adaptations that I've ever seen. Like it's really close to the source material, and in some cases, the actors are better than what's in the comic book, and some of the dialogue is just incredibly written. Great soundtrack. Unfortunately, during the filming of this, there's a scene where the Brandon Lee get shot, and he actually died on film,
yeah.
Filming this movie, because,
yeah.
And it's so weird because Bruce Lee also had a very similar death, and in the Bruce Lee story, with the Jason Lee playing Bruce Lee, you'll see like there's this mystic thing that's always chasing the family, and it kind of has Bruce Lee defending Brandon, you know, in a scene where this entity is trying to kill his son, and Jason Lee, who's playing Bruce Lee, is fighting this armored being, like, and it's like in a dream sequence, and it's the irony of the story is they both sort of died, you know, filming, and Bruce Lee died very, very fairly young, but Brandon Lee did too. So yeah, if you haven't seen The Crow, I highly recommend it. It is one of the best comic book films that I've seen. It's up there with Rocketeer and The Joker. You could tell kind of my taste in movies. But it's in my top five comic book movies of all time. So this comic book that Todd McFarlane Productions put together, it is very similar to the original material, just told differently in different art and in different style. Like there's some things that you see through the eyes of the Crow, and not actually the character the Crow, but the actual crow that follows him around, which is really cool looking. The dialogue is really rich and emotional. Like there's an emotional touch, you know, from the little girl, and also from Eric and the relationships that they have and the tragedy of the whole situation. And it's one of the best revenge stories that I've ever seen. So yeah, check out The Crow.
I feel like I need to watch that again sometime. It's just been so long since I've watched it, and I remember like loving it. I haven't seen it recently.
Yeah. Matter of fact, I think I'm gonna grab that CD and listen to it on the way to work this week in my old retro car, which I've been driving more than my new one.
That's awesome.
I think that's it.
That's all you got?
Yeah.
That's it for me.
That's all I
Unless
got.
Unless you guys have something.
Nope. I read another one, but it's, what is it? It's 1 o'clock. I can hold off on that.
Well, summarize it. Don't do the detail, but just.
Well, have you ever heard? I don't know if you guys are familiar with it. It's called Shadow Man.
I'm very familiar with Shadow Man.
I just reread. I don't know if you saw, but Shadow Man Omnibus is going to be solicited. The classic.
Yeah,
I own that. What do you call it? The
hardcover.
Yeah, the Valiant Masters. So I already own what, 0 through 7.
That was cool when they were doing those, because that was like right at the cusp when they couldn't like publish their own comic book because of the lawsuit with the other Valiant. They were fighting in court, but they were trying to get these hardcovers out to do reprints, and they came out with like Harbinger and Shadow Man and a couple others, and it's really awesome.
I think I'll probably get the Omnibus. It just...
I am, because...
$100.
I have not missed a Valiant. I have not missed an issue or a collected edition. Like I've double dipped on everything, and I mean double, triple. So like if it comes out in trade, I get the trade, and if it comes out in hardcover, I have the hardcover.
It just kills me that I've already spent whatever that, you know, this was $25. And now I'm going to spend another $100 and
some of these. It doesn't kill me because it just takes me back, because this 90s period is, like I said, so special to me. It's so weird because I'm a Bronze Age kid. I grew up in the Bronze Age. But when I was the most stressed was college. And the association with what comics did for me at that time is just incredible because
it
was
helps you
my
through.
it was my decompression, man.
Yeah, exactly. All right, well, I'll just go through the quick a quick brush of this. This is pretty, it's not like heavily detailed anyhow, but this is the first issue of Shadow Man. So first appearance of Shadow Man, first appearance of Jack Boniface. And he is a saxophone player at a jazz club. And he's playing one night, and this woman that comes in again. She comes in, she's been coming in about 2 weeks in a row now. Usually she leaves before he's done, but this time she's still there. And he asks to join her, and she's like, "Oh yeah, sure. I was hoping you would." And they hit it off and stuff. And she says, "You know, why don't we we?" Oh no, she says, "Can you walk me home?" And he says, "Yeah." So ends up at her place, and she hands him a glass of wine. He starts drinking it and asks what it is, and he's like, "Oh, it's unusual." And she's like, "It's I don't know how to pronounce this. APERITIF. Aperitif. I don't know how to pronounce it."
Yeah, I think they're aperitif, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I know I've heard of it. I just don't know how to say it out loud. So she says that's what it is, and it makes things taste better. And he's like, "Are we having a late night snack?" And she says, "Just you, come here." And he starts feeling dizzy. And she starts taking off her clothes. She starts drinking something, and she starts transforming. You see that she's got very sharp teeth, and she goes down to start biting him. And suddenly, there's these like strange lights that kind of scare her off, and she runs off. He wakes up the next day, feeling very, very odd, very strange, hungover, but more like from the drug than from any type of alcohol. He looks at the mirror and sees that he's got dried blood on his neck. So she had started to bite him before she'd run off. He leaves the room, and in the hallway notices that there's another door ajar, and it leads upstairs to an attic. He goes up there, and it's a terrible smell. There's all these rotting corpses up there, and so he's like, "Oh my God, this was not a nightmare. She actually tried to kill me," and she and he runs off. The next day, he's back at the club, and when he's done, he starts walking down the street and sees a strange blue mask that, as far as he knows, it's just one of the carnival masks that they wear during the parade, and somebody just tossed it aside. So he grabs it, and as he's walking down the street, he hears somebody whispering some strange things off in an open door, and he kind of peeks in, and he sees this crazy guy with another mask on, with a gold mask with feathers, and he's talking, and he's got two bloody knives, one in each hand, and he's been stabbing this woman. So Jack puts this blue mask on, and suddenly he's not nervous or scared at all. He actually starts fighting with this guy with the double knives and manages to avoid the blades. Like, he's just moving very quickly. Like, I just got to keep doing the unexpected, keep him from stabbing me. Manages to get the knives out of his hand, and that kind of freaks the attacker out. He just turns around and runs away without warning, and suddenly he starts chasing after him, but there's a shotgun blast and then a car, and hears that, and the shotgun kind of keeps him from going further, and a car peels away. So Jack knows that this crazy guy must have had some sort of help. And it just ends with Jack just in this backyard, and this old woman giving him the hex sign and telling him to get out of her yard, and calls him and says, and then she turns around, and he's gone, and she says he's gone like he never was there, that shifty Shadow Man. And that's the end of the first issue. So I've read this a few times, and just always impressed with how a lot of these, original Valiant story started out very, very grounded, very down to earth, very different than what we were seeing at the time, you know, from any of the other publishers. So I just saw it sitting there on my shelf, and I'm like, you know what? I think I want to reread number one. And I think it was in my head because of I saw the solicit for the omnibus coming.
Yeah, I saw it too.
So you're right. I'm going to buy it. I wish that
that they never came out with. They never did Eternal Warrior.
No, that's right. Yeah. And you know what?
They had solicited it, but canceled it. And I remember asking Dinesh, what the hell happened? And
well, I don't remember.
It came down to, like, reproduction. Trying to recreate the issue was the issue.
Really?
Yeah. I guess they didn't have the material to recreate it the way they wanted to.
Yeah. That's too bad. That would have been nice.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's
love
one
that.
That I
love that
all the
universe.
Of.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but that's it. That's all I had. I knew that was going to be a quick read, and I was in the mood for it. So.
Yeah, that sounds good. There's just so much I want to do, and not enough life left.
You would if you didn't have to work every day.
Yeah, if I could retire tomorrow, I already have plans.
Mm-hmm.
It just it seems so hard because every year healthcare costs go up, and it just seems like, how am I going to do this? How am I going to do that?
No, it is. It's tough. I mean, I've got at least 10 years, if not more. I mean, you know, the kids are 8. We've been contributing towards a college fund, but, you know, I mean, depends on where they want to go to college. But if they choose to go some expensive college, they're going to need to get financial aid because, you know, we don't have that.
What my parents told me.
Same here.
They said, we don't have the money to put you through college. You're going to have to earn your way. And it resonated with me because I did.
Yeah. Same here.
They did say, though, if you stay in state, you have a place to stay, and that's a huge part of your cost. So that's what I chose to do.
Yeah, I mean,
I could get enough scholarships and stuff, and we were very fortunate because Barb and I, we had zero college expense, which is unlike a lot of people, but
yeah.
We started
a college fund for both of them. They offer it in New York State, like an actual college fund. So we started that. They got, I mean, they already have several thousand in there. But I mean, depending on where they wanted to school, that could be one or two semesters. You know what I mean? Or if they go to a state school, it could already cover them for the first couple of years of college. So it depends on what they want to do.
Yeah. Well, start young and tell them. What my dad says. What do you love to do? Oh, I love comics, and I love video games at the time, and I love to go to the movies, and I love to go on vacations, and I love. He's like, son, you know what? I love those two. I love those two, but you know what that means? They cost money.
Uh huh.
So choose your occupation wisely, son. Because I was a fireman, I didn't have that much money, and just choose what you do. So it's like it resonated with me, and it's like, okay, everything that I have to pick something I'm good at. I have to pick something that makes money.
Yeah.
You like the fine things in life? If you're frugal and you don't need it, then you have a little more flexibility in what you choose. But my dad says never stop doing what you love. In other words, just always have something that makes money to fall back on.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Like just because I chose this career path doesn't mean I can't create comics. I could if I wanted to.
Yeah. And you are.
Yeah, I am, slowly but surely. I got to get on it and Bill's getting so damn close, and I haven't moved on mine, and I gotta get on it.
Yeah, well, I'm looking forward to backing both of them, so.
Yeah, Bill's close. Bill's real close. I think he's already at like production. Like, I gotta figure out how to produce it. But I think he's got all the pages and cover and title and everything.
Wow,
Lettering
nice.
and.
Good for him.
Yep. All right. Well, you've been listening to the Geek Brunch Retrocast with Chris Ivy at MythMaking ETC, Rob Krieger at Rob Krieger, and me at Mike Myers Brunch, all located at geekbrunchpodcast.com. And I hope you guys have a good extra day off, which I'm
Yeah,
very
true.
glad to
Me too.
have. Very glad to
Yes.
have. Like, I mowed the grass on Thursday night. I was so proud of myself.
So you could have the
Yeah,
weekend.
I came home fairly early. I said, you know what? I'm gonna take 2 hours of vacation and just go try to mow the grass. So I don't have to do it today. So that's really positive. Plus, it's raining all the time, so it would have been rough.
Smart thing to do.
Yeah.
That's when I did it too, was Thursday, 'cause we had rain coming in the next couple of days.
And the thing that I do with grass that pays off is I bag it. I don't know what you do if you just
Yeah,
like cut it, but I like
we bag.
bag the grass and put it in the trash, and our trash is Friday. So it's like per the perfect day to mow grass because I don't have to have those bags like in the side of the house, you know.
Yeah, that was a good idea too.
Yeah, so it worked out. Worked out really well. Now we just have
Yeah,
to
enjoy the
survive the
extra day
hail.
off. Awesome.
Yeah. Enjoy your week and read a lot of comics.
Yeah.
All right, fellas.
All right, take care. Bye.
Take it easy.